are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, March the 30th, and going back 30 years this week, talking Pistons Blazers. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Hope you guys are hanging in there during the shutdown, the coronavirus, and all of that. The bad headlines of numbers keep coming in. Some prominent people have passed away. I'm just seeing the news as I tape this late tonight that a state rep from Hamtramck, Isaac Robinson, passed away at the age of 44, a fighter for people in and around the city of Detroit. Really sad news to hear that. It hits me a little bit harder because I, with my work at PlayMichigan.com, I've been contacting a lot of the state reps these last few weeks. I think I've talked to four or five of them over the last couple weeks. A Democratic representative from Hamtramck could have easily been someone that was on my list of folks to call. Happened to be not, but Isaac Robinson passes away on Sunday. Obviously, all of our good feelings and everything that we could pass along is goes to his family and constituents and all the others who are being impacted, and best wishes and thanks from all of us here in the Locked On Podcast Network for the first responders, hospital officials, nurses, doctors, etc., that are dealing with everything. And I know that there are so many sectors of other people out there who are doing great work, heroic work during these tough, tough times. And those of us who, you know, don't have a lot going on in our daily lives and are just kind of forced to be home, obviously pales in comparison to the pain and exhaustion that other people are facing, but, you know, hardships for everyone around. And hopefully throughout this ordeal, we can continue to bring you the Locked On Pistons podcast show, get your mind off things and maybe entertain you a little bit during these times. But not a whole lot of NBA news over the weekend, as you can imagine. Something that we didn't mention last week yet was that longtime scout of the Detroit Pistons, Maury Hanks, is in an ICU, as the last we heard as I taped this late on Sunday night, in Knoxville, Tennessee. He was a college scout. He is a college scout, I should say. Obviously, we hope for the best and that Maury someday resumes his duties as college scout for the Pistons. He's 62 years old, been with the Pistons for 7 years. Apparently, famously hosted a Final Four party every year, and he would have been in Atlanta doing that here in these next week or so. So sad, obviously, that he's fighting it, and we hope for the best for Maury and that he bounces back and is healthy very soon. Also, Kevin Calhoun, the freelance cameraman for Fox Sports Detroit, a guy that I have had a few conversations with over the years, is reportedly in a medically induced coma as of last week and on a ventilator as well. So we passed along the GoFundMe last week on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Nice to see donations into the tens of thousands of dollars. So hats off to all you guys who donated to that. And if you can spare a little cash, money will be put to good use. I can assure you that, as I know some of the folks at Fox Sports Detroit, freelancers and otherwise, are helping to spearhead that cause as well. Good news from the Pistons last week. Christian Wood exited quarantine as well. Also seeing Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, clean bills of health. Marcus Smart from Boston on Sunday reported that he was out of the woods as well. So glad to see. Pistons organization-wise, there's the hospitals are getting overrun here in Metro Detroit, as we know. And the Detroit Pistons practice facility is one of the facilities that they're looking at for possibly turning into a medical facility for overrun, or the Pistons have offered to have it be used as a sleeping facility for healthy medical workers as well. And apparently the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, it was one of the places that they were checking out as being a candidate for one of these types of uses. So glad to see that the Pistons are offering their services for that. We know the facility now in the New Center area, right near Henry Ford Hospital, and also not all that far from DMC as well. But here on the podcast, We've got our 64-man bracket. Hard to make these transitions these days, as we know, but we're going to try to do our best. 64-man bracket for the most influential Pistons figures of all time. Looking for guests on that. I got a couple people reaching out for that. I'll get back to you guys this week, I promise. And, yeah, well, we picked the 64 last week with Austin, and now we're looking to seed the top 32 as one seeds, two seeds, etc., all the way down to eight seeds. We will not seed the bottom half of the bracket. We'll just randomly match them up with some of the seeded folks as well. So send me your lists of who thinks you think should be seeded 1, 2, 3, all the way down to eight, groups of four, and all those seedings as well, as we look forward to getting that bracket done here over these next several weeks. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com if you're interested, and also send me your lists. I'll kind of compare my notes with that and figure out what arguments are going to be happening at the end of this week, either Thursday or Friday's show that we do here on Locked on Pistons. But up next, we are going to talk to Mike Richman. He is the host of Locked on Blazers. Over the weekend, I watched Game 5 of the 1990 NBA Finals. Better times for Detroit Pistons fans, and we broke it down. We'll break this up into two parts on Monday and Tuesday's show. And that is coming up next. And later on, we're going to hear from a young fan about his thoughts from that game as well. That's coming up next here on the Locked on Pistons podcast. But hey, it could not be a more perfect time for this sponsor. I've used them, I think, three times in the last week, getting some Chinese food. Also, Ema is available on this app as well. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game or replays of the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. I go downstairs, I say hi to the delivery man, and appreciate their work during this shutdown as well. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They also make life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery to, convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 freaking dollars of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. Again, that's code LOCKEDONNBA, all one word, for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
Yes, sir!
What up, world? It's your past first point guard and Blazer beat writer, Mike Richman. You are listening to another episode of Locked on Blazers, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, available wherever you get podcasts. Today is a very special episode, another retro rewatch. We're watching Game 5 of the 1990 NBA Finals. And joining me, the host of Locked on Pistons and a Pistons writer all over the web and print, Matt Schoch. Matt, how you doing, man?
Mike, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. Just trying to hang in there here in Michigan. Things are pretty dire, as one has probably heard about, just like many locales around the country. But yeah, we're getting some respite with the Netflix and also the YouTube of watching games like this. So I appreciate you coming on and talking.
Yeah, let's turn back the clock to a happier time for now, shall we? Sure. Certainly happier in Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, you know, the 90s were good for Detroit and Michigan sports. There
Definitely.
Was the Red Wings were very good. The Tigers were about to go into a nice, you know, it was a bad Tigers decade, but they were about to go into a better time. And yeah, the Lions are the Lions, so there's nothing good there. But the Pistons, you know, this is the third straight NBA Finals that the Pistons were in that we're going to talk about, 1990, losing in seven games to the Lakers and then sweeping them the year after and then meeting Drexler and Porter and Edelman and all those guys for the 1990 Finals.
Yeah. Do Detroiters or Michiganers claim on the Fab Five?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Ann Arbor's just 45 minutes away, so you got the Fab Five, too. Michigan State, that was kind of after the Fab Five was the beginning of Izzo's run.
Right,
you know,
right,
Michigan's
right.
Basically split down the middle for Michigan and Michigan State. So good times for both of those programs. And, of course, the football teams have had their shares of success over the years, too.
Yeah, so the game we watched today was Game 5 of the 1990 NBA Finals. You can watch it on YouTube. It'll be in the episode description, but also just search 1990 NBA Finals Game 5 on YouTube. That's how Matt and I found it. We found a couple different links that we shared back and forth. We'll spare you the play-by-play recap, but here's how it ends. Pistons win 92-90 and claim the world championship, their second in a row. It's pretty...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was. I think that what's interesting about this series is, and you know, this is 30 years ago now, so it's one thing right there. And I'm 7 years old. This is one of my first sports memories, really.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. So, this series, looking back and doing some reading on the first four games before Game Five, this is a series that could have gone either way. There was only one game that was a bit of a blowout, the first game in Portland. So Game Three, when Dumars had 33. Other than that, it's going right to the final shot. Right to the buzzer, even right after the buzzer in Game 4, one of the more bananas games that you can really remember. Yeah, yeah. So an unbelievable finish there.
Rick Adelman actually says in an interview prior to this game, like one of those sort of like pregame coach interviews, that he's like, we could easily be up 3-1, which is pretty cringeworthy, and I feel like not the type of thing you would say in a modern interview because you'd get killed for it, but he might be right, to be quite honest.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, just a quick rundown here, you know, the Blazers go up 10 points in Game 1 at the Palace, couldn't seal it, 25-9 run finish by the Pistons. Isaiah goes, makes some big shots there. Isaiah fouls out in overtime of Game 2 as Portland gets the win. Terry Porter hits a couple free throws in regulation. Drexler, some free throws in overtime to win it. Clef Robinson with the block of James Edwards at the buzzer.
Yep.
And the Pistons go to Portland, where they had not won in 17 years. They lost 20 straight games in Portland before Game 3 of the Finals. And in the late 70s, you know, the Pistons were still in the Western Conference for the late 70s. So they played twice a year in some of those. So 20 straight, it seemed like a daunting opportunity or task to have three straight games in Portland, and really losing Game 2, it's more likely that they would have lost all three games in Portland than won all three games.
Yeah, Blazers hadn't lost three games in a row at home since 1985. So we're talking four full seasons without three straight home losses.
And still one of the tougher places in the NBA to play, obviously, especially
absolutely.
For
the Glass
Eastern Conference.
Palace there. That's on right. The banks of the Willamette River.
Yeah, I was at a game last year at the Moda Center. Saw Devin Booker and the Suns go to Portland. One of my good friends lives out in Oregon, so I was out there visiting. And yeah, it's obviously a great city, and I encourage any Locked On Pistons listeners to head out there and check it out. But yeah, obviously a daunting place to play on the road.
Yeah, the Blazers actually played a preseason game back in Memorial Coliseum this year, their preseason opener against the Nuggets before things kind of went south for the Blazers in a hurry. But they brought in the old retro floor, and they kind of did like a faux 70s night for their preseason opener. It was really fun to be back in that building that really doesn't see a lot of basketball otherwise.
Yeah, so the series shifts to Portland, Game 3, Joe Dumars, and this is the, you know, kind of the famous sad story of this series, is that right before, about an hour and a half before the game, Chuck Daly and Isaiah Thomas find out that Joe Dumars' dad passed away, and they decided not to tell Joe until after the game. He scored 33, and that was, like I said, one blowout of this series. And then Game 4 was a crazy game. A bunch of free throws at the end, probably a no call on Joe Dumars that could have been a foul on a Terry Porter drive. And then Isaiah picks it up, gets fouled, casually knocks down a half-court shot after he gets fouled that doesn't count, you know, rightfully so, makes both the free throws. Terry Porter makes two free throws. And then a play that could have been thought of as, if things went a little differently, as a big bonehead moment in Detroit sports, Gerald Henderson gets the pass from James Edwards, could have easily dribbled out the clock and ended the game. Instead, goes up for a fast break, easy layup, scores it with 1.3 seconds left, put the Pistons up three. And then Danny Young, the running three-pointer a few steps inside of half court, knocks it down all net. And a little bit of confusion as the Dick Stockton and Hubie Brown thought it was ruled good early. I don't know if it was or not, but eventually Earl Strom and the refs got together and rightfully called it that it was after the buzzer and gave the Pistons the win.
Yeah, it's the long line of Blazers what ifs that is certainly up there among them.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to Game 5, and let's hop into it. This was.
Yep.
I thought Isaiah was fantastic in this game for the Pistons. Blazers did it with balance, but who is your MVP Pistons MVP from this game when they held on to win 92-90?
It's tough because, like you said, it's between two guys. It's very clearly between two guys because it's Isaiah who carries the team for most of this game and then Vinnie Johnson who ripped him through at the end. It's a toss-up, but I'm going to say, rightfully so, Isaiah's the MVP of the series, but that Vinnie Johnson was the MVP of this game in particular.
I agree. 16 in the fourth quarter, hit the game winner with 0.7 seconds left. He was fantastic. And down the stretch, the Blazers kind of looked like they're going to pull away twice, and then twice, Vinnie Johnson just went on a little microwave run and kept him in the game.
Yeah, Pistons down 90-83 with a minute 59 to go. Probably another one of those what-ifs for Portland sports there, like you mentioned, Trailblazers history. But Vinnie Johnson was just great at the end. A bunch of mid-range shots. He grabbed his own miss at one point and scored. Duckworth had an in-and-out shot with a minute 10 to go. The Pistons win a jump ball late, set up an Isaiah Thomas jump shot. Tied up with 36.5 seconds to go, Portland ball. And I don't know if what the basketball strategy was back then, but if you had to do it all over again, you're probably thinking 2-for-1 at that point, right?
Yeah,
if you had to do it all over again.
There's a lot of weird stuff like that in these games where there's a lot of deliberate just like getting into your set stuff that I don't think happens in modern basketball. But yeah, I think you got to go 2-for-1 there in the era. But you're not, you know, the Blazers shot an outrageous number of threes. They took 12 in this game.
Right.
So it's now, like, you know, the math is just very different at this point.
Yeah, right. And so they turn the ball over and the Pistons get it, call the timeout. And Isaiah Thomas working on Terry Porter looks like he wants to drive and put the game in his hands, as you would expect and as you might hope if you're a Pistons fan as well. But passes it off to the right wing. Vinnie Johnson catches it with about 5 seconds left and Kersey's on him. And, you know, sizes him up and puts up just the unconventional quick release of Vinnie Johnson. Obviously, he's outsized by Jerome Kersey, but his feet don't get set. It's kind of a trademark of his. It's an awkward shot. So, and he extends his arms on his jump shot so high up in the air, and it makes it tougher to defend than your typical jumper that a forward like Kersey might have a little bit easier time with. It's an awkward shot by an awkward shooter, but he's taken it 1,000 times in his life, and he knocks it down all net.
Yeah, and he has 14 at this point. Like, he's got a lot of positive reinforcement on his decision making to date. So
yeah, right in front of the Pistons bench too. Yeah. So, you know, it's a comfortable place to be in terms of even on the road and everything. And then, you know, like you said, 0.7 seconds, 0.7. He's known as one of his nicknames here, obviously the microwave, but 007 is what we call him.
Yeah, yeah,
on the clock on the TV, it's 007. And then they get the ball in Terry Porter from the corner and misses it, and that's it.
Yeah, it was it's a great final. I mean, not if you're a Blazer fan sort of reliving the trauma, but in terms of basketball, it's a pretty fun final 4.5 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a lot of great players out there. And I think that's what kind of stands out with the Pistons. But I mean, as far as this game in particular, if you had to call a Portland MVP for you guys, who do you think was the guy in that
game? I think it's Kevin Duckworth because he was so good early and they were kind of having a little bit of trouble. It looked like the Pistons were going to pull away a couple times. And Duckworth was, I think he made his first six of his first seven shots. Like, he was really good. He kind of cooled down the stretch, and Porter and Drexler took over more of the scoring load in the second half. But the first three quarters, Duck was their best player offensively. And he held the Detroit bigs at bay. They didn't get crushed on the glass. In fact, the Blazers had a rebounding advantage early, you know, but Laimbeer and James Edwards didn't go off. I thought Rodman came in and played well in this game, but he wasn't a big factor. So I'm going to give it to Duckworth, although there was a lot of balance here and the Blazers sort of leaned on the guards when it mattered.
Yeah, and 19 for Duckworth late in the third quarter and then only scored 2 points the rest of the way. So they kind of went away from him. But yeah, I mean, he's a reliable, probably third option for the Blazers offense at this time. But this, you know, for him to dominate like he did for three quarters really has got to be one of the highlights of his career, obviously in a losing effort. And it's tough to kind of reconcile a loss and calling it one of his best games, but it's got to be one of his bigger moments.
Oh yeah, he was fantastic in this one. I think coming out from returning from injury is the sort of signature Duckworth moment, but here he is back playing against a really good front line in Detroit, and I thought he was really, really good in this one. So he gets my MVP.
Yeah. And what about some underrated players? I mean, to get to the finals, and the Pistons obviously are in this category, but you can't just be two players or three players. You got to be deep. Who are the guys? Because I got a couple in mind for the Pistons. Who are the guys that you think, you know, were they on a worse team, or had they had more opportunities? Could have, and obviously there's a couple rookies off the bench in this series that you would probably put in this category. But who are those underrated guys?
Yeah, like Cliff Robinson was not very. He was good early in the series, but not very good in this particular game. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get a lot better. Like Cliff Robinson, but when they get back a couple years later, is a much better basketball player. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say underrated the way that Blazer fandom works. Like, all of these dudes are so hallowed. Like, if you've been, you said we're at the Moda Center, you'll see a lot of those jerseys up in the rafters.
For sure.
And there's a big push that, you know, Kersey, who's like sort of the obvious most underrated type of player, you know, a hustle guy, third or fourth option type, is people want his jersey retired. Buck Williams was a multi-time All-Star. He's later in his career, obviously. He's an All-Star with the Nets early in his career. So I think it's probably Buck Williams who could have been a more sort of featured type wing. But if we're looking for real underrated players in this Blazer team, it's rookie Drazen Petrovic. Adelman, find some minutes for Drazen, okay? He's going to demand to leave, and it's going to end up sad for everyone.
Yeah, and he actually didn't even play in this game, correct? Yeah. He played the previous four games in the series, including when they needed a three-pointer late in the Danny Young game, that he was out there at the final minutes to try to make that happen.
But Adelman just gave up on his bench in this game. He said, we're going to win it with our – we know who our five best players is. We're going to win it with them.
Yeah, and the Pistons kind of along those same lines. It was an eight-man team at this point. You got, you know, Greenwood and Henderson kind of and Hastings kind of at the end of the bench. But the year before it was nine. You had Rick Mahorn. He gets taken in the expansion draft by the Timberwolves, so he's not here for the second title.
Right.
But yeah, VJ, Isaiah, and Joe, and then you got John Sally, Dennis Rodman, Mark Aguirre, James Edwards, and Laimbeer. And really the two underrated guys for my money are Vinnie Johnson and James Edwards. I just think that these are two guys who, you know, at this point in their career, Vinnie's in his early 30s, James is as well. I think that these guys, if given bigger roles on better teams, are like fringe all-star type of players. And I know James Edwards is starting now because Mahorn was a starter previous to him leaving the team. But these are two guys that, you know, on bad teams could have been 20 and 10 type of guys.
Oh, yeah, James Edwards was scoring in the teens for most of his early career, like kind of until he settled into being more of a role player. He was a consistent scorer for basically a decade prior to getting to this Pistons team.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, those are two guys that took a back seat and just such a great eight-man group. And I think that's something that's kind of get lost in history, especially by non-Pistons fans, is that the bad boys are just kind of, and rightfully so, you get a little bit of the bad stigma of just kind of mucking up the NBA and doing all the stuff that they did. But this was eight or nine, like, really good players, too. I mean, this was a very talented team of supremely talented offensive players and a few guys that just really got after it defensively, too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's take a quick break, come back in the second segment, and talk about maybe putting some of these players in the modern game. All right, still talking here with Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons. We're talking about Game 5 of the 1990 NBA Finals. Matt, which player from this Pistons team, the 1990 Pistons team that you have said was so good and perhaps underappreciated for how good they were, would you put on the current Pistons to help out this squad?
The current Pistons to help out. I mean, it's tough because the Pistons.
Literally anyone?
Yeah, literally anyone, because right now the biggest need is point guard. So Isaiah Thomas is the obvious choice.
Yeah,
but we'll just kind of throw that out because he's a Hall of Famer. And, of course, any team could use an Isaiah Thomas.
And
really, similarly with Portland and Detroit, obviously on different levels of the franchises right now, I think both of these teams need wings right now.
Totally,
so,
and Drexler would play three. He'd be fine.
That'd be just fine. But for looking at this Pistons roster, my heart wants to say Dennis Rodman because it's kind of the DNA of the Pistons to be that defensive player and you know, the rebounder and all the effort kind of stuff. But my head is going to say instead that this team could really use Mark Aguirre.
That was my thought, too. I'm glad you went with him. Yeah,
this guy was a three-time All-Star in Dallas before obviously taking a little bit of a lesser role with Detroit from the trade with Adrian Dantley. You know, the two seasons before the trade to Detroit, he made the Western Conference All-Star team. He averaged almost 30 a game in his third season early in his career. Yeah, for Dallas, one of the best players out of Chicago all time, and obviously took DePaul to the Final Four as well. So, yeah, this Pistons team, while, you know, you're hopeful that Sekou Doumbouya becomes that versatile wing that every good team needs, you know, Mark Aguirre could just fill it up for you while you figure out your backcourt and you try to develop along Christian Wood and maybe build around Blake Griffin if he could come back in any kind of health going forward. What about the Blazers? Who could they use? Who could Dame and CJ really benefit from having alongside them?
Yeah, well, it's like when we were emailing back and forth about the show notes, I said, let's, like, Drexler is the choice, right? Like, who could they add to the team? Let's add, you know, at worst, the third best player in the history of the franchise. I think Clyde could play next to Dame and CJ a little bit. Obviously, you worry about the ball, but, like, they needed an incorporated Carmelo Anthony, and Clyde Drexler would just be, like, a much better version of that, a sort of ball-dominant ISO scorer. They would figure it out. I'm not worried about that. But let's say we can't pick Clyde because you can't pick the obvious all-star. I don't think it's Porter. I don't think they need another undersized guard. That just seems like a bad decision. So I think it's Jerome Kersey. Like, I think it's a versatile defender, hustle wing who has enough of his own offense to be a factor. I don't think they need another true big. If you ask me about the 92 championship team, I'm saying Cliff Robinson, but rookie Cliff Robinson isn't going to help the Blazers that much. So yeah. I think right now it's probably, I think it's JK25, Jerome Kersey.
Yeah, Kersey with the big game four there to kind of give the Blazers a chance in that one. And certainly, like I said, the teams kind of mirror each other as definitely needing those wings there. But like as I was kind of watching this game and thinking about Isaiah and Joe, you know, in today's NBA, a little bit more of obviously offensive and scoring oriented. But yeah, I thought that there was a big mirror there between what Isaiah and Joe were and Lillard and McCollum right now. And that's because, you know, nobody's going to sit here and say that Dame Lillard is one of the three best players in the NBA. I think that's a pretty clear delineation between LeBron and Giannis and Kawhi right now. And similarly to back then, you're talking about Jordan, Bird, and Magic. But, you know, you take that next tier, and Dame is in there somewhere. And Isaiah is in there somewhere.
Now, yeah, a clear top 10 guy in the league, but probably not, but, you know, struggling to be a top 5 guy in the league.
Right, exactly. And so and then you got Dumars and CJ McCollum overqualified as second best players on a team. Like, you know, very clearly the second best player, but probably one of the better second best players in the league at that time on a roster, I would think. So what did you think about my comparison between
I think they're pretty similar. And what it made me think was, like, how much do the Blazers wish that they had the role players that this Pistons team had? You know, like, how much do they need Bill Laimbeer? And how much do they need a Mark Aguirre, like a dude who really could go score? Dennis Rodman, John Sally coming off the bench. A really, really reliable sixth man in Vinnie Johnson. Like, the obvious comparisons are right there, but this was a night where Joe Dumars didn't have it. Isaiah Thomas was fantastic, and they relied on the rest of the crew to get it done, which is sort of the Blazers' formula. Is like, when Dame and CJ aren't excellent, they're in trouble. So what it really made me think was, like, how do you build a championship team around a really good backcourt, a star backcourt that it has some real overlap, is that you don't worry about having a third guard. Bring in Vinnie Johnson, it doesn't matter. And then just you need a front line that can really shut people down. And that's what this Pistons team had. They were methodical. They ran their stuff. They were getting deep into the shot clock. And they kind of, when they needed it, they let Isaiah and Joe go. But they could execute, and they really could defend.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that obviously the Pistons, you can't talk about the Bad Boys without how they got under team skin. And I know that they're probably one of the hated teams around the league, especially in this era. And we know that here in Pistons land. And you could throw the 04 Pistons into that group as well, as they had to play that way to get wins against some of these ultra talented teams around the league. But I think that's another thing that kind of jumped out at me when watching this. Jerome Kersey, when Rodman comes in this game, Kersey at one point, like, throws Rodman down at the baseline. And then another time later on, Lambeer's defending Duckworth inside and basically dives on like a forearm that Duckworth gives him. And the refs called it. They called a foul on Lambeer, rightfully so. in that time, but like Duckworth was like so fired up that he got that call.
Yeah, he was
like
hyped.
Pumping his fist and all that. And to me, and obviously these are, you know, just regular plays throughout the game, but it was indicative to me of that Pistons pesting, you know, that they had kind of gotten under the skin of the Blazers as they had for the Celtics and the Bulls and the Lakers and all the great teams of this era.
Yeah, you really saw their sort of character, the what made them so good, come out here in just the 48 minutes of basketball we watched this weekend. Before we move to the third segment, let's quickly, which of these players, when you were watching this game from 30 years ago, which of the players on the Pistons roster is the least equipped to play in the modern game? Like, who could you not add?
I think that, first off, you're thinking the physicality because you can't do this stuff anymore. So what jumps in first is Laimbeer and Rodman in that sense. But Laimbeer would have shot some more threes. I think that he would
have become... Yeah, he's too skilled. He would have been really good.
He would have figured a way to do it. And Rodman, the defensive player, every team can use
a
good defensive player like that.
He would start at center for half the teams in the league.
Exactly. So the answer to me is James Edwards, just because the back of the basket, you know, old school center, that's just kind of... that's what he brought, that turnaround jumper that everyone in Detroit remembers. And he's probably the guy who is least equipped to transition his game, I think.
Yeah, I have the same idea. I think it's Duckworth. Like, I think he had enough touch to play backup center. You know, I think he is capable of being a really high level backup. I'm thinking like Al Jefferson, late in his career with the Hornets, where you could just throw it down to maybe Enes Kanter is a good example of that type of thing, where it's like you could play him on second units and maybe try to bully backup centers and score a bunch. But Duckworth in like defending 45 pick and rolls a game seems like a real nightmare.
Thanks so much to Mike Richman of Locked On Blazers for joining us for that. We've got another 15 minutes or so with Mike where we kind of reflected and looked ahead on where these particular Blazers and Pistons teams fit in history for the franchises. Also threw him a couple of questions about the current iteration of the Portland Trailblazers as well. But speaking of assignments that I gave out over the weekend, in addition to Mike joining us, I gave my friend Leo, who's 5.5, big Detroit sports fan, the assignment of watching the 1990 NBA Finals Game 5 as well. And this is a guy who's really into sports, really into basketball, really into baseball, and of course his biggest sport, football, as well, and very excited to talk about all things sports at all times. So he's been asking which classic games that he should be watching. So I told him I needed him to watch this game, watch the Pistons clinch the championship, and he had a great observation that's one that I also had over the weekend watching Duke and Kentucky, the Christian Laettner shot, and of course the Vinnie Johnson shot in this game as well. So let's go to Leo and hear from him about one of his biggest observations from this game.
They didn't have the scoreboard on the Pistons Trailblazers game for the whole time. It was hard for me to follow along. Couldn't have the score on the TV.
Leo is exactly right. It's hard to watch basketball games. We've been programming to always having the score on the game as we're watching them these days. So we can be on our phone, maybe having conversations with other people while we're watching a game, miss a couple baskets and just check and see what the score is at the game. So Leo is absolutely right. Really observant young man to make that that recollection. So thanks to Leo for fulfilling his homework assignment. He gets an A+ from us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. He also shared with me that Vinnie Johnson was his favorite player, and he was excited to see that the Pistons got the NBA championship. I know he's been to Little Caesars Arena to see games as well. Got to see the Blake Griffin. I believe he was there in the house when they blew the big lead against the Clippers. So good for Leo to see some Pistons success over the weekend, maybe for the first time ever. But Leo also asked me for what some other games are that he should be watching. So not just Pistons, but also Detroit sports and maybe even other sports. Get to me on Twitter and I'll pass it back along to Leo, who's just like all the kids out there looking for things to do during their time away from school and probably getting a little bit of cabin fever at home. So what are the big games that Leo and other young sports fans and other sports fans that are getting into Detroit sports, what are the games that they need to watch? Get in touch with me at Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Let me know what you think are the biggest games that the young folks need to watch so they can think back to a time when Detroit sports teams actually won. But that'll do it for today. More on the 1990 NBA Finals with Mike Richman of Locked On Blazers tomorrow. Excited to share that with you guys as well. Already got another interview in the can that I'm excited to share with you guys later this week as well. We'll do the 64-man bracket for most influential Pistons of all time. That's coming up later in the week as well. So all sorts of good stuff here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But that'll do it for our show today. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Hollinger and Duncan. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.